The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Peter King, all things football morning in America. What did he make out of the Cardinals' destruction of Dallas? Why is it Seattle is so good every year? Tua coming on board and other things. Peter King, he zooms in with us coming up at 10:20. Football morning in America, none better than Peter King. Jimmy Vaccaro, none better than Jimmy Vaccaro, the wisest of the wise guys, the view from Vegas as we come into a college football weekend where the Big Ten is back in play, and of course the Cardinals-Seattle game. What is the view in Vegas, the numbers, the odds from Jimmy Vaccaro? 40-plus years he's been doing the bookmaking in Vegas at South Point Resort and Casino. Our opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. Eric Sorensen is with us. I'm pissed off today. I'm not in a good mood today. Talk me off the ledge on this one. So I see where the COVID numbers are going back up. I have seen where there's some JV football games that have already been canceled for tonight. So I'm sitting here as a dad today, getting kind of tired of parents hiding COVID and school districts being in the, well, you know, we got to get these games in and then we're canceling out. Richard Obert had a good note that there's already been 19 games that have been canceled because of COVID related. And I think that I saw where Mountain Point canceled their game with Basha tonight. This is JV. So to think that there's not stuff going around, and when I talk with parents in my spaces, and my own son is anxious being in hallways at school because kids aren't getting masked up, and his friends are nervous, and friends of ours, kids have COVID, and there's more than a couple kids that have COVID that are playing on the football teams, I'm just at wit's end with every district having a different way to go about their business, where I don't know why parents think that it's so important their kids have to be on the field and hide this stuff. And so I'm angry today. I'm just angry today. There's a lot of good stuff going on, Eric. I don't mean to dump on you, but you just popped up on my screen. And so I'm venting at you. That's what if you just tune into the show, you're like, well, I just want to talk sports and get through it. We do, but there's times where there's just stuff going on. It's like, what exactly are we freaking doing here?
And no, so it sounds a lot like what's going on with our country. There's division. There's sneakiness. There's misconception. There's lying. There's cover-ups. And you can just parlay that right into what's going on with COVID. But I'm not shocked by anything that you just said, because people are greedy. People are selfish. People aren't looking out for the good of the big picture. They're more concerned with, like you said, okay, we have to get these games in. We'll get, you know what? Why don't you go talk to the Phoenix Union schools and the Tucson schools? They haven't played a single game yet. So I'm sorry you're angry. But I can see why you would be.
I have a student who's a good student, and he's struggling. He's just struggling because everybody around him is struggling. The quarterback on the team has COVID. He's not there. I'm guessing. I could be wrong. I could be crazy. I'm guessing the quarterback of the team probably came in contact with some other kids. I don't know. Just a thought. And so, but got to keep on playing. And
you know what I found interesting, Brad, is when you talked to Jason Mon, Saguaro's head coach, right after the announcement was made that the Chaparral game was canceled.
Right.
He said that, you know, like, yeah, we're a 5A school, but we're a small 5A school, and we need like our JV players to be our scout team. So a lot of these schools, you're going to have the JV players and the varsity players overlapping and hitting one another and touching one another. So it's not surprising when said JV player has COVID, don't tell anyone, and goes out and practices. Not only is he endangering the JV team, but he's endangering the varsity team as well.
Yeah. I mean, my son pulled himself out of the game tonight, pulled himself out of practice yesterday, because he's trying to get around school, and he has grandparents. And he made a decision on his own that I'm very proud of him for. But I can't fathom the stress going on with these kids. I can't fathom a single mom or a single dad or parents that are fighting with one another. And then kids go to school and the whole distancing thing. And the teachers are trying the best that they can. People want to bag on teachers. Go teach for a week. You know, it's just go teach rather than just view them as some people do. Oh, it's just teachers. They work half the year and they, you know, and they just disregard them. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, on the sports end of things, I'm highly, I'm anticipating Cardinals Seattle. Looking forward to talking with Peter about that. I sent you the story this morning about Nick Saban and Alabama. So for those that didn't know, or maybe, did you know that story?
No, it didn't surprise me at all, but I didn't know it.
So front page of the New York Times had that story. It's just a little note. Nick Saban, so they swabbed Nick Saban's nose last week because it came out that he was COVID. So they swab his nose on Friday, and it's a four-hour drive to get to the facility where the swab would have to go to. Well, screw that. We're Alabama. So they got their private jet. And somebody swabbed his nose, and they got on the private jet with the Alabama on the tail, and they flew. And then they got it tested, and they flew back. So on game day, they tested again. So Nick was able to coach last week because a private jet took his nose gunk and flew to go get it happen. So when they turn that in at the end of the month, you know, accounts receivable, private jet, recruiting test, top piano player in New York, recruitment, nose swab, Nick Saban.
It's never what you know, it's who you know. And if you're Nick Saban and you are the biggest thing in Alabama, period, what Nick Saban wants, Nick Saban gets.
How about you? Like, you have TCU and Oklahoma Saturday. Are you going, by the way?
No.
No,
I'm taking 2020 off.
Eric is a TCU wannabe grad fan.
No.
You wear the hat backwards. You fly the flag. You do all that.
The diploma is in my den. If you really want me to go get it, I mean, I am a certified graduate. TCU's playing Oklahoma. TCU's beaten Oklahoma once since joining the Big 12. TCU always plays Oklahoma close. Always, every single year, never beats them. So we'll see what happens Saturday, but I'm sure it'll be an Oklahoma win.
So Gary Patterson does not have Lincoln Riley's number at all.
He actually does.
For three
but
quarters.
It's always like 27-24, 31-28, 17-14. It's never a blowout, but TCU never wins.
You sound very much like you're expecting the worst. Like you're expecting the
sunny day. Oh yeah. I mean, they. And plus, it's a home game, and TCU suddenly can't win home games. They're 0-2 at home this year. So who knows? I don't know.
So in 2 weeks, we're going to have ASU to talk about, which we're excited for that, and U of A and the Pac-12. But this weekend, the Big Ten opens up. I myself am hoping Nebraska loses by 80. I just think the way that they acted. It's funny, when the Big Ten was going down in flames, you had Justin Fields, who could have very easily said, I'm opting out, I'm going to go get ready for the NFL. Instead, he said, no, I'm going to sit here and fight this. So I like him. I like him. He was one of the organizers of let's get back on the field. And so here he is, a Heisman candidate. Everybody's expecting Trevor Lawrence to be the number one overall pick, but Justin Fields now can go on the field and say, here's what I'm all about. I doubt he even comes close to Trevor Lawrence, but you never know. Trevor Lawrence could sit there if the Jets have the number one overall pick and say, you know, I don't think I want to go back. I think Clemson's looking pretty good right now. You think he should do that, huh?
The Jets are really bad.
Forget about the final score of games. They're just a bad organization.
I get it's the New York market and all that stuff, but if you're Trevor Lawrence, it doesn't matter where you go. If you're good, you're going to get all the endorsements. You're going to be the number one pick.
Right.
And I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for him to say, nah, I'm good. I wouldn't recommend doing that, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
Because like today, Minnesota started tearing apart their roster. So to me, that they made a deal this morning, and so it looks like the Vikings are saying, okay, with this Kirk Cousins deal, we paid him a whole bunch of money. Mm-hmm. We're not good. We're going to go a different direction. Atlanta is sitting over there. They've already fired their GM and their coach, and they have a quarterback who's been around a long time in Matt Ryan, so he needs to move on. So there's three teams right there that are saying, okay, what are we going to do? Houston stinks, but they have a lot of money tied up in Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
Drew Brees is saying, I'm going to move on, but the Saints are a playoff team in all likelihood.
The entire NFC East is bad. You can just throw every single team in the division in there. So,
But I wouldn't think that Dallas, with Dak's injury, if Dallas ended up becoming the number one overall pick.
That's not going to happen.
Philadelphia and the Giants play tonight. I don't think those two teams are going to happen. The football team in Washington, I don't think that's going to happen. Although they've already pulled their quarterback. Right. But this weekend for the college side, I'm hoping Ohio State wins 80-0. And I have to believe that most of the Big Ten is hoping. Don't you think?
I'm just curious why you are supporting Justin Fields for wanting to get football back, but you're tearing down Nebraska for essentially wanting the same thing.
I think the way that Nebraska went about it was acting like little babies, stomping their feet, and we're going to sue. And Justin Fields did not go down the path. What was it? 7 players at Nebraska? 8 players that filed suit? Or let's get out of the Big Ten. We'll just get out of the Big Ten. I thought they acted like a bunch of little babies. And it became public. So, and I'm not the biggest Ohio State guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like the way that he went about his business was different than Nebraska. Does that make sense to you or not?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Justin Fields like got a petition going that hundreds of thousands of people signed, and Nebraska sort of took it to the next level.
Let's just get out of the Big Ten. We'll show you guys.
In a great way, but, Nebraska was kind of like that school that was like yelling through the forest, but no one could really hear them because they're Nebraska and they've done nothing since they arrived in the Big Ten. So like you and I talked about in the show, Brad, if it's Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or Sparty or one of the blue blood programs,
right,
it carries a little bit more water than Nebraska, who has great football tradition, but let's be honest, hasn't really been relevant for the last 20 years. So
I was listening to our friend Brock Huard on Sirius XM on his show, and he was talking about, this was earlier in the week, how the last time Nebraska had a big, it was like a big statement win was against Brock. They actually knocked him out of the game. And it was funny because the pictures of it, of the game he was showing his wife of that game, and his wife said, well, what looks good in that picture is your butt. You have a great butt in that game. Nothing else looks good. So when we have Brock on in a couple of weeks, I'm probably going to open the interview with now the guy whose wife says he has a great butt on the air. And that's Brock.
Well, that was circa 1998. So
yeah. And he said he could do 400 pounds back then. So his glutes were massive. Now he's like the rest of us. He's got a spare tire in the middle and all that. So, or at least me. I don't know about you. And I don't have much of a spare tire. But. All right. Peter King is coming up next. Eric and I are going to join on the other side. There's actually some Phil Mickelson playing in Phoenix news I want to get to. He may be here in 2 weeks, so get into that. And the baseball playoffs and much more after Peter King and then Jimmy Vaccaro on a busy Thursday. Stay with us. As promised, Peter King, Football Morning in America, the Peter King podcast as well. We'll talk more about that as the minutes move through. Peter, I'm curious on the Cardinals' end on Monday night. Was it Dallas being that inept or the Cardinals being that good, a combination of both, a national stage for Arizona? What'd you make out of it?
obviously, it was an impressive night for the Cardinals, Brad, but I think everything right now going against Dallas has to be taken not with a grain of salt, but with an entire salt shaker. You know, their offensive line, you know, they thought 5-6 months ago was going to be the absolute strength of their team. Travis Frederick retired. Both starting tackles got hurt. Zach Martin, one of the best three guards in football, went out with a concussion early. So, I mean, you know, this is a team that probably has four offensive linemen right now that were either not going to make the team last summer or, you know, are just marginal players. So you want to be excited. But, you know, the thing that I looked at in that game, two things really. Kyler Murray is just an absolute amusement park of a football player. And, you know, Brad, I try to watch every team, but I don't see enough really to make a definitive judgment of any team. But I was going to go to bed at halftime of that game. I was exhausted, but I said, I'm having too much fun watching Kyler Murray. He's just so athletically gifted and so incredibly fast. It's like it's Tyreek Hill playing quarterback. So yeah. that I think in some of his current needy points or weaknesses, which I would say are, you know, the accuracy of the deep ball and, you know, the chemistry, like with Andy Isabel on those deep balls, those, you know, that you assume will get a little bit better. But he just, I thought he was great the other night. And then the other thing I think is, you know, we're just getting to know how good Buda Baker is and can be. And I just thought there were so many, when you are facing a team that has a major weakness like Dallas does right now in protecting, in my opinion, I thought Vance Joseph had a great defensive plan, which is show no mercy. We are going after Andy Dalton all night, and we are going to torment him. And that's exactly what they did, and the Cowboys just couldn't respond.
Yeah, you mentioned Buda Baker, Peter. Here's a player that Seattle passed on from University of Washington. One pick before, they could have taken Buda Baker. They didn't. He's out here in relative anonymity, even to the point where Brian Griese had to be reminded by Lewis Riddick in the broadcast. Brian was talking about how great a player he is, and Lewis said, well, yeah, he should be. He's the highest paid safety in the game. If you were to line up a bunch of people that follow football and say, who's the highest paid safety in the game? I doubt many would say Buda Baker. So you see him out here in the desert doing his thing. There are not many better than him. And in Vance Joseph's space, there's now conversation. He's going to get himself back in line to be a head coach once again with a showing out here in Arizona, even before the Monday night game against Dallas.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant when people start when someone's unit of a team plays great for two or three weeks, and then they say, well, this guy either is going to be a head coach or is going to be a strong contender to be a head coach. Not that I don't think that that's the case, with Vance Joseph. But I also think that every year we hear that and then Robert Saleh doesn't get a job, for instance. Like 1 year ago today, Robert Saleh was the hot coordinator in football. Network TV could not show him enough. He was shown. What was my note last year? I think the network showed him as many times. I forget. I think it was a Monday night game as they showed John Gruden. And, you know, so, you know, again, there are going to be, I think there are going to be quite a few jobs open. And I think, you know, what you hear the last two or three weeks is, okay, Todd Bowles, he's going to get a job. Right. You know, Vance Joseph might get a job. Certainly, and all those, and they're all very valid, especially because I think especially in Todd Bowles' case, they're, you know, with the New York Jets, they're gigantic extenuating circumstances. But, you know, we'll see. I think there's a lot of really good coaching being done right now at a time when great coaching is needed because teams are not practicing as much as they did a year ago.
Peter King with us, the Peter King podcast. Before I get you out of here, two things. A thumbnail on Seattle and why, how can they just be so consistent year after year after year? They come here Sunday, they're undefeated, they're coming off a bye. Russell Wilson looks like an MVP guy. What is it about the consistency with Seattle, Peter?
When you have a quarterback, you always have a chance. And Russell Wilson is not only a good quarterback, but I think he has the will to win in fourth quarter. So if it's close, you know, there is no quarterback, and that includes Patrick Mahomes, who I really do trust in the fourth quarter. But there's no quarterback I trust more in the fourth quarter, not Aaron Rodgers, not Mahomes, nobody. I think that's one thing. And I think the second thing is John Schneider and Pete Carroll, for as nice a guy as he is, he and John Schneider are both fairly ruthless. You know, if you can't help us anymore, there's the door. We love you. Thank you. But there's no room for sentimentality here. Yeah. And that I've always felt with the Seahawks is an incredibly valuable tool to building a team. And let me give you one example, Brad. If you look at, I think 2 years ago, when Doug Baldwin was still a really, really effective player, when they lost Doug Baldwin, when he retired, I said, that is a huge loss. People don't understand just the ethos of Doug Baldwin. He is the most competitive human being, one of the most competitive human beings I've ever met in any walk of life. And when they lost him, I said, that's going to be huge. And Schneider basically shrugged his shoulders, drafted DK Metcalf, late in the second round, after, by the way, trading down four times and then picking him. But I'm only saying that, hey, they love Doug Baldwin. He was wonderful. He was this, he was that. But he's, you know, he's gone. No sentimentality, Brad. It's not like they're going to go to the ends of the earth to make their players happy all the time. When Richard Sherman left, yep, it was a little bit of a bitter parting. Seahawks just said, okay, we'll take all the people who are angry at us and we'll be fine. Marshawn Lynch left. Everybody wanted to kill Schneider. They believe in the full team concept and they don't get emotional about losing single players.
Yeah, it's really admirable being in this division and seeing them come through twice a year and how they keep it together. Before I get you out of here, eyebrow raising, head scratching, or makes perfect sense? Tua being inserted in Miami with Fitzpatrick, an Arizona kid, went to Highland High School about 5 miles from me. He's had a terrific, terrific run. But for now, is being sat down. What'd you make of it?
I think at first, Brad, you see them go out and just really wipe the 49ers off the field. They beat the 49ers by 26. They shut out the Jets by 24. And then they make a quarterback change. But I honestly think what Brian Flores sees when he sees his team is, you know, we're a nice competitive team and we might even be 9-7 with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, whereas Fitzpatrick's ceiling is here, you know, I think he believes that Tagovailoa's defense is here, or his defense, his ceiling is here.
Right.
And so I think this is just a guy knowing his team, knowing his players, really liking Ryan Fitzpatrick. Somebody asked me yesterday if I thought now that the Dolphins, who are like the latter-day Seahawks, they never met a trade they didn't like, what would they do at the trading deadline with Fitzpatrick? Could they get anything for him for like a San Francisco wanting a better backup or whatever? And I just said I would be very surprised if they traded Fitzpatrick, because what are you going to get for him, a five? And not only that, Brad, but they're not positive about Tua. Mm-hmm. You know, they're optimistic about him, but how can you be positive about a guy who's never played before? And he's a guy who has had a share of injuries. You need Ryan Fitzpatrick to be your insurance policy.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look at it with a bye week, it makes sense this point of the season and to get to that next level. Podcast this week, who do you have coming up?
I got Chris Collins, Chris Collinsworth, who's really, really interesting, especially with what he thinks should happen on the coaching search. He thinks the New York Jets should hire Eric Bieniemy, draft Trevor Lawrence, get what they can in trade for Sam Darnold, and then build their team the way that the Kansas City Chiefs were built. You know, and it's easy to say that, but I think his point is you get receiver speed, and you also get, you know, the kind of players on the team that you view as long-term solutions. So anyway, that's his thought. I've also, I also have Thomas Dimitroff, the former Falcons GM, sort of doing a post-mortem on what in the world happened in Atlanta. So anybody, it's up right now. The podcast is up right now.
Check it out, the Peter King Podcast. Peter, thank you for the time. We'll see you next week.
All right, Brad, take care.
There's Peter King with us, Football Morning in America, and we're back with more after this timeout. So we have Jimmy Vaccaro coming up in a minute, up in Vegas, about 6 minutes away. Eric is going to – are you going to Hamilton, Saguaro tomorrow night, start the high school weekend?
Yep.
So that game's on ESPN2. It's a 6 p.m. kick.
It is. I was alerted to that last week, and I'm glad whoever told me that reminded me of that because I would have probably shown up at like 6:45.
Yeah, just rolled on in. So
some smart person told me that.
What are you expecting? This is a national display of Hamilton and Saguaro. Saguaro doesn't sound like they are what they were last year, but they'll get a bunch of transfers next week. Hamilton has a quarterback that they did. Nick Arve last year was pretty good. He went
really good.
Southwest Missouri or Minnesota or somewhere. He just transferred out. But what are you expecting tomorrow night?
I think Hamilton's going to win the game. I just think they're a little bit more seasoned to this point. And it, like you said, if this game was played in a week or 2 weeks and the transfers that Saguaro has coming in, specifically up front, were eligible, it might be different. But it's going to be great because it sounds like both teams are really, really good up front. I mean, Saguaro is elite up front on both sides of the ball. And Hamilton pushed around Centennial in week one. I mean, just completely dominated them. So I would think it'd probably be a little bit like last year's open division game, maybe like a 20-17, 21-14 type game, pretty low scoring.
Yeah. And that's the only game you're going to. Some nights you go to two games, right? So is there anything else tomorrow night like that you're looking at and say, oh, this will be interesting to see how this one turns out? Or
I'm curious to see how Kai Milner at Higley plays against Chandler, because I saw Kai last week in person against Desert Ridge, and he was unbelievable. Like, all the hype that I heard about, you know, check all the boxes. Bigger, stronger, throws on the run better this year. Okay, that no offense, but that was Desert Ridge. Now you got Chandler making the trip to Gilbert, and I'd love to see someone just not challenge Chandler, but at least push them a little bit because they
somewhere
just
that'll
have been,
happen. That'll
they've
happen.
They've been a hot knife through butter through the first three games of the year.
Somewhere they'll have a game where they're, because it happens to everybody, where kids just have that letdown.
Of course.
But when will that let down? It's not that they're going to lose. I don't think anybody's going to touch them. I haven't seen them in person. I saw them on tape. Saw them last week actually live on the stream against Perry, and that was just men against babies.
Right.
You know, that's just how it is. And I didn't see them in running clock against Pinnacle where they chewed them up and spit them out. But
you know, Coach Gerritsen told me last year in December before the open division started, he's like, we're good this year, but next year we're going to be even better. I'm like, what? He's like, we bring back like 19 of 20 of our 21 top players or something like that. And sure enough, he's right. So,
well, have fun. I will see you when I see you. Thanks for jumping in. We'll have Eric with his content over at Saguaro and Hamilton up next. Jimmy Vaccaro from Vegas. Stay with us. All right, as promised, let's go to Las Vegas. Jimmy Vaccaro with us, South Point Resort Casino. All you fans here in Arizona that are into the NFL and college side of things, let's just get right to it because the Big Ten is coming back. More on that in a minute. But first, tonight, Jimmy, tonight, the South Point, you've got Eagles, you've got Giants, two teams that stink, but it's teams that people are passionate about. Eagles, Giants, view in Vegas, Jimmy.
Everything dealing with betting is a good game, my friend. You know that as well as anybody. The Eagles opened up like a 3-point favorite. We're up to 5.5. It's been Eagle business, and the total is 45. But like I said, and then you couple that with college games tonight, especially Illinois and Wisconsin, there'll be a lot of parlays. But it doesn't matter who they are. It's when are they playing and when can we bet on it.
Seattle and Arizona, huge game for the Cardinals after they destroyed Dallas on Monday night. View in Vegas, Jimmy.
My friend, this is a big step for you guys. You got to win something like this to take that next big step. And beating Seattle, who's a 3.5-point road favorite, I anticipate the game to go up. But you guys stand up here and win, your power rating will obviously increase about 3 points as far as I'm concerned.
And playing at home for the Cardinals, that's got to be an advantage for them.
No doubt about it.
All right, on the Big Ten side, Big Ten comes back, Jimmy. What does this mean for business?
Huge, my friend, huge, because what we're looking at now is simply, you know, the first 3 weeks of December, it's just the NFL once a week. Now you have a regular schedule for the first 3 weeks, and obviously a lot will be up in the air, so I welcome it. I mean, I think it's going to be a monster, you know, selling point for us here in Las Vegas and all around the world as far as your booking. Big Ten starts today. I can't wait.
Ohio State, Nebraska is the game that most people are focused in on. Here's two programs with storied traditions. The Ohio State side is saying we have to be in this postseason. The view, Ohio State, Nebraska, Jimmy.
Well, obviously, what you're going to get in a lot of these games is simply they're going to have to make their mark. In other words, starting this late in the season, they have to, like, pile on points. So you see a lot of, like, late guys who are these big favorites who are simply going to keep trying to score to impress the people who pick the winners of the college playoff system. So look for that late touchdown always to come with the big favorites. That's all I can tell you.
Jimmy Vaccaro with us. Thanks, Jimmy, from Vegas. Be safe. That's at the South Point Resort and Casino. Jimmy Vaccaro, it's always good to check in with Jimmy. We had a note about Phil Mickelson. So Phil Mickelson is in this space where he's 50. And with the virus around, he's concerned about being around people. The Houston Open is the week before the Masters. It takes place in 2 weeks. Masters is 3 weeks away. And in the space of the last 24 hours, Phil has put it out there that if the Houston Open allows fans in, which they're talking about doing, about 2,000 fans, that he is considering pulling out. In fact, he's the point where his quote said, if Phoenix does not have people, I'll probably go there. So he'd play in the Schwabie, as we like to call it here in the Valley, November 5th through the 8th. That's just in a couple weeks. That would be a huge, huge get. Even though fans couldn't come out to watch him play, but that's where he'd come tune up before going to Augusta. So we actually hope that happens. That would be great. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, senior executive vice president of Nothing or Everything. Thanks again to Peter King and to Jimmy Vaccaro. Be safe. Have a great day.